From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Deucing in Dallas, Texas, and joining me is the only sober man who isn't smoking weed in Colorado, Mr. John Grace. Say hello,
yeah,
John.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
Rocky Mountain High. Although natural, I would say.
Yeah. Rocky Mountain High. Yeah.
For our Rob Zombie fans out there, all two of you still listening after we've trashed him.
Yeah, we have a few friends of the show who love Rob Zombie and are like, "Fuck you."
Yeah, they don't like the bashing.
They don't like the bashing.
They don't like us bashing the Z-Man.
No,
and his flat-assed wife.
RZ and his, yes, you know, you just at least there's no shelf life on that ass. You know, you don't have to look. You don't have to look at Sherry Moon Zombie's ass and go, "Well," because you know an ass has like a shorter shelf life than breasts do. So you never look at it and go, "When's that gonna go? When's it just gonna go?"
Because there's nothing there.
There's nothing there.
There's nothing there at all.
Well,
a pancake.
She's got a pancake. Turn it over. It needs to be brown. It needs some browning.
Eat something.
Eat something. Why don't you? We were supposed to have a guest on tonight to talk about the movie Creed. However, he didn't show up. So we're just going to kind of wing it. John and I are coming down off the holidays. So
both low-carbing.
Yeah, we're both low-carbing, so we're both pissed off right now.
It's such a chick thing.
It's, oh, God. We're gonna talk about our weight. I'm on a diet right now.
No, I'm doing the 70s bodybuilder low-carb diet without the steroids, so you can imagine how painful that is.
I'm doing the, like, 90s celebrity fitness trainer, like, secret diet.
Yeah, you're not doing the P90X with the rubber bands and the push-ups.
No, P90X just seems like punishing yourself.
It does look torturous, and it's funny because I have all these fitness mailings will say, of course, the P90X works. It's making you work out for 90 minutes a day.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, pretty intense. No, but yeah, I've just been eating like, you know, eggs, protein, you know, avocados, vegetables, stuff like that, and it's worked. Here's the chick talk coming. I managed to lose weight over the holidays.
Well, as long as you're not going to be like Penn Jillette, where you constantly repeat yourself and then go on a long story that has no ending.
Did you know that Albert Fish...
he always does...
The reason we shouldn't have the death penalty is because Albert Fish stuck needles into his groin. He enjoyed pain. He wanted to die. That's why we can't have the death penalty.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, Teller?
Yeah. There's a reason Teller doesn't have a podcast. But yeah, he's like, no, I was trying to listen to him talk about his diet because I got a lot of tension because he went from looking like a fat jolly guy to like a death warmed over with his diet. And it took him something like 25 minutes to explain his diet, and I just gave up on the podcast. He was like, I would have never thought about eating a lot of protein. And literally a minute later, and I was eating a lot of protein. And it's like, apparently not enough carbs because your brain doesn't seem to be working.
Well, I'm just glad he wasn't talking about atheism or
something. He's an atheist. You know, we don't expect God to rescue our diet.
We get it. You don't believe in God, okay?
Yeah, it's like I got it the 5,000th time you told me. But he had Gilbert Gottfried on his show, and all they did was laugh at each other.
By the way, Gilbert Gottfried's appearance on the Anthony Cumia show is the funniest fucking thing I've ever heard.
It's the funniest 2 hours I think I've ever watched.
I mean, they're talking about. I was a big Mox Brothers fan, and then you see him on Carson, and he's like, "Well, you know, we would go to the movies, we'd go to a movie then." And Marilyn Monroe never got to that place. Where she was on Carson. She figured it out. She died young. She wasn't on Carson going, well, you know.
Yeah, it's like, because then he did Betty Davis. Did like the old Betty Davis, which I remember growing up seeing Betty Davis on like Carson. And it was just strange. It's like, why does anybody want to listen to her? Yeah. She was just all bitchy and, you know, it's just like, sometimes you just don't want to listen to them. And, well, no, the, everything Gilbert's like amused by, but his post, like, what would be post-stroke Groucho or whatever? Chico is the body. You know, it's just... I mean, he does it perfectly. I mean, his podcast is entertaining, but he's actually more entertaining on other shows.
He was, I mean, him and Anthony Cumia were, they killed me. I mean, I was like, I almost had a wreck. I was listening to it in the car, and I was just like.
I watched it twice. I couldn't catch all the jokes. I was laughing so much. I was missing jokes.
I need to go and listen to it again.
And I couldn't. I'll be like Jen Gillette. And I couldn't pause the Roku. So I forgot. Because I was eating a lot of protein.
It was you. And I was hangry.
And I took a cold shower. And then I called Lou Reed on the phone. And then forgot he was dead. Because I've been eating lots of protein.
Was he talking about it on Penn Sunday School? Where was that?
So I think it was Penn Sunday School. Some about diet. And like I tried the early Penn Sunday Schools and could not get through them. I just because all
Corolla's
he was saying
or...
he was an atheist every 5 minutes. It's like, yeah, I know.
Well,
okay?
That's why I never listened to it because it was called Penn Sunday School. I was like, okay, it's gonna be a bunch of atheist talk. Who cares?
And then he had that dispute with what's that guy Maddox, that web guy.
Oh yeah, who by the way? Yes. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
Yeah. It's like he had that feud with Maddox where it's like. Who was taken out of context on the old bullshit show.
Yeah.
And then Penn Jillette just like he was confronted with it on Twitter. He's like, I'm sorry. I don't remember. It's an old show. I'm sorry.
Whatever. Yeah, he was like, I'm sorry. He's probably right.
He's probably right. I'm sorry. It's like, it was an old show. I don't remember.
Maddox cracks like, me up. He's one of the original like internet ranters. He's,
oh, really?
I was reading him back in like high school.
I only know of him because he ripped on Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, that was brilliant. No, you don't. His article, No, You Don't Fucking Love Science, is is brilliant.
It's perfect.
But no, I remember getting introduced to him in high school, and he was the first angry voice on the internet that I found that I like latched onto and like read everything and stuff. It was great. Like his book, The Alphabet of Manliness, is hysterical. It's really funny.
Well, I think the first angry person I saw on the internet was probably like, I think she was called like Atheist Girl or Atheist Bitch or something like that. But she was like an objectivist that hated Ayn Rand. It was weird. It was really. It was.
That's,
you know,
interesting.
It was back,
you don't hear about those often.
It was back before we didn't really have blogs. We had just like websites.
Right. That's what Maddox's was. It was a website.
Right. Right. And I'm sure. I don't know how I didn't encounter Maddox, but I wasn't really following all the trends online. I got into the web really late, like around 99 or 2000. I didn't pay much attention to the internet before that, but I was eating lots of protein.
Yeah,
what about that? But yeah, it was a kind of like Gillette's podcast is just not that entertaining, and kind of reminds me of what's wrong with a lot of these podcasts. People get into them and stuff, but they don't really know how to structure them. And I mean, we're ones to talk about structure, but I think we have a beginning and a middle and an end to all of our shows, and these guys don't really have a beginning. Kind of have a middle. There's an end because they say goodbye, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's, you listen to them, and it's almost like it's like a Captain Beefheart album. You can kind of stop it any or turn on the vacuum for an hour, and when it's replay, you're back where you were because you wouldn't know where you left off. So
yeah, it's good.
You know, there's a lot of these aimless podcasts that you know out there, and it's none of our friends. All our friends do pretty good shows, but. Yeah. Yeah, they're celebrities. These are people who've been in showbiz for decades.
I'm kind of astounded by how some people just haven't figured. Not that I'm so brilliant, but you know, I'm just kind of some podcasts from comedians and stuff are really lazy.
Yeah,
you know, like I'm a big Jim Florentine fan. Like I like his stuff, like Terrorizing Telemarketers, but his podcast is really hit or miss. Like some days it's just kind of like you can tell he's kind of just like going through stuff, trying to find shit to.
Yeah, because
he hasn't done any prep.
He's yeah, they're doing it without an idea. They're just improvised. The early Nick DiPaolos were kind of like that.
Yeah, no, it, you know,
I heard he's improved a lot, but I haven't listened to him lately.
His show's kind of hit or miss too. Like, I started listening to it, and some shows are great, and some of them I'm kind of like, where's this going? You know.
Yeah, I mean, the last time I listened to him was he was like, "Don't worry, folks, John McCain's going to go in there and wipe up the election." So that tells you how far back.
Oh,
that was.
Great! Great, good.
I don't even think I had a kid back when I heard Nick DiPaolo's podcast for the last time.
He was doing some drops though that killed me.
He's a really funny guy, mm-hmm. but you know, if you're going to do like the almost more than once a week podcast, it's probably too much work.
It's one hard.
We would certainly never do like multiple episodes in a week.
No, and you know, like Carolla's show's very popular, but his show, like you've said many times, it is very repetitive.
Yeah.
And it, like, you know, if here I just listened to like his show with Dr. Drew now, because mm-hmm. whatever he talks about on that show is what he's been talking about all week on his podcast, so I can skip that and just get that. And
yeah,
Dr. Drew's hearing it for the first time going, oh,
yeah, huh. Well, Adam, I think that anal sex and marijuana are bad. But the entire
there's some concern.
You only have to listen to one episode every week because
it's the same show
every day.
Yeah, and like the thing about the show is, I think getting rid of Allison Rosen was a big mistake.
Yeah,
I don't think Gina Grad's as interesting of a presence. She's just kind of a standard hole, you know.
Right.
And Allison, I thought, kind of got some friction going with Adam, which was good.
Yeah.
Now you kind of have just the sort of sycophants and the yes men, you know, around.
Right.
And it's just the people who kind of know what Adam wants. And whereas, like, I just noticed, like, I could listen to the show a few times a week. I listen to it, like, once a month now.
Yeah.
And it's just because there's a guest I want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
If there's somebody on the show I want to hear. I used to listen whenever Joe Coy was on, but he's on like every other day now. So I'm like, ah, oh, God. And
I used to listen when Matt Ashley was on or whatever. And then, David Wilde.
Oh, yeah, David Wilde, yeah.
The Rolling Stone writer, yeah. Because he would only be on like once every 2 weeks. Now he's on like every other day.
Yeah, I was going to say, I couldn't, but Matt Ashley, who is that? Who are you, and what have you done with John?
No, it was David Wilde, who, of course, is a Rolling Stone writer, and that's like the worst publication ever.
It is, but he's, you know, he's a kind of, I don't know, like some shows with him are good just because I like it when Adam like bitches about music and stuff.
Right, because then David Wilde will name some hit song from like 1978 that Adam hated.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, I loved it when David Wilde tried to turn Adam onto Lou Reed.
Oh, I missed that.
No, it was funny. Just because Adam hates Lou Reed so much. And, yeah. Like, David would be like, I think this song, it will be the one that does it. And then Adam's like, this song's fucking shit.
Yeah, this is shit. Put on John Hyatt.
Yeah, John Hyatt. I mean, it's not as good as Graham Parker.
Yeah. But funny because Anthony Cumia hates Lou Reed, too.
Lou Reed, when people say they hate Lou Reed, I'm like, I get it. Yep. I love the Velvet Underground.
I like some of Lou Reed's early stuff, and he's got some bright spots through his solo.
He does. I mean, not everything he did is great, but I don't think he's terrible. I think has that sort of like, he's sort of the quintessential dickhead New York artist.
Yeah.
You know.
It's true. Well, it's funny because I was having a discussion with somebody about Robbie Robertson's solo career.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that first Robbie Robertson album, when it came out in like 87 or whatever, somebody was stunned. I loved it because like I said, I thought it was like the greatest thing I'd heard at the time, because I said, look, my peers were into R.E.M., Milli Vanilli, Motley Crue, just acts I didn't care one thing or the other about. They sounded childish to me, and I said this Robbie Robertson album comes out and it's got this Daniel Lanois production that's like this super cinematic aural landscape.
Lanois is one of the great producers. He's
right. Amazing. It's just like, and this is something people forget. In the 80s, digital recording, you know, digitally recording albums was a new thing, and a lot of stuff sounded bad.
Yeah,
like and just because digital recording just wasn't. They were trying to duplicate, well, maybe they weren't trying to duplicate the analog sound. And that Robbie Robertson album just blew me away. because it sounded good and it was very digitally, you know, it was like probably a triple digital album for all I know. Mm. You know, if you look, we used to look on the back of the CD, was it analog to digital? Was it digital to digital? Because it had the code on the back. But that one sounded like they'd figured out how to make a really deep sounding digital recording. This is before Paul's Boutique, I should add. The Beastie Boys. And there just hadn't been anything out with that kind of depth. And I love the album. And yeah, A Showdown at Big Sky was probably the only AOR hit, I think. And then Rod Stewart covered Broken Arrow a few years later in an inferior version. But it had this great Daniel Lanois production. And Robertson kind of talks his way through songs. He wasn't much of a singer. He also didn't tour for the album, so the sales never really reflected because he didn't like live performing. You can watch The Last Waltz and you can tell he was probably never going to tour ever again. And the album at the time, I think critics kind of pissed on it because they hated him anyway.
Well, critics always piss on good shit, you know. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but if something's critically acclaimed, beware. I don't know.
But musicians loved it. Like, I would run into people who play guitar, play horns, or they love that album. And he had this interesting solo career where, you know, he put out these kind of odd albums that were just, yeah, they sold okay, kind of underappreciated. He put out a great soundtrack for a PBS series. I think it was PBS, or it might have been TNT, like music for the Native American. The Native Americans, it's a terrific soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's got that awesome... It is a good day to die.
Yeah!
That song's awesome.
Yeah, that's his best work.
That's like, go to the gym, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Like,
great.
Go to the gym and lift some weights. Like, that song's hard.
It has a real cinematic vibe to it.
It does. It feels like you're watching a spaghetti western or something.
Right, and I was like, well, his lyrics were really... a lot of real movie influence, like, and the titles are like Hell's Half Acre and American Roulette, which I think you could find old 50s movies with those titles. And I said that probably came from his rooming with Martin Scorsese for a few years.
Yeah, when he did soundtracks for him, right? He did the Shutter Island and stuff.
Yeah, Raging Bull, he worked on that. And I think Scorsese was involved in producing Robertson's only acting vehicle, Carney, which we may have to consider sometime for a future show. That first album was just, I was like, well, as a kid back then, as a teenager, I was like, this is adult rock. This is grown up rock and roll, or this is grown up rock music. What everybody else has listened to, REM, Milli Vanilli, Motley Crue, that's kid stuff.
Like REM is like college radio shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. But the whole Orange Crush song or whatever the hell it is.
I got my spine.
Those are designed for kids, yeah, as far as I'm concerned. Because kids loved them. Like, it's the end of the world and we know it, and all that whiny singing. That was
End of the World as We Know It was fun just because it was easy to make fun of. You know?
Yeah.
You like in Tommy Boy when David Spade and Chris Farley are like, sing like TV.
Yeah. I've never seen Tommy Boy.
Oh, I
just realized that. Everybody loves that movie.
And Tommy Boy, you know, that was one that hit me at the right age. Like, it was, you know, I was the perfect age. I saw it. I loved it. I'll always love that movie. But, like, if you were to watch it, I don't know if you'd like it, if you saw it now.
I probably wouldn't. It's probably outdated.
It probably is. But, I mean.
But I'll put it this way. My newspaper publisher, when I had my first reporting job, loved that movie. He was like, Tommy Boy, that is my favorite.
That's my favorite.
Oh, Tommy Boy was on HBO the other day. And, yeah, so we got a lot of that. But I realized when Robertson's album came out, it's like what he really did was that album took rock music to the next level. It did what Lou Reed couldn't really do, and it did what some of these other singer-songwriters couldn't really do, even Bob Dylan. And, it took it to the next level, but nobody was ready for it. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of what Johnny Ray Gasca had said to me one time about some of these kung fu movies that we think are so great and were really underappreciated. He goes, there is such a thing as giving the audience too much.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what he did. It's like, that's why musicians loved it. Mm-hmm. And it has its fans. I mean, if you go look on Amazon and look at the 5-star reviews, it really deeply affected a lot of people. But it doesn't translate to large sales because it's too much. Mm-hmm. But he did what Bruce Springsteen and David Bowie and a lot of these guys really couldn't do. Was to me, he made successful adult rock and roll. It was grown up.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Springsteen always felt kind of
Contrived?
Contrived. Like, he's doing the whole, hey, man, a lot of people down at the steel mill out of work, you know?
Yeah.
Working class, never, working class. I'm like, you've never fucking worked in your, you know, you're a musician, you know?
He never has. It's like
it's like, to me, Bruce Springsteen's working class shtick is like Kiss's makeup. You know,
yeah.
It's an act. It's not real.
It's funny because I back then music critics loved him so much, but it's like they were completely benign at what a contrived act he was.
Yeah,
and then they were slamming other guys for being contrived. But it's like, what, you love Springsteen? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
it's like something
I've always considered like Springsteen to be like that is when people use the derogatory term dad rock.
Yeah, he is dad rock.
Yeah, that's what I think of as dad rock.
Springsteen is totally dad rock. That's what defines it. I remember I was like, as a kid, you know, there's nothing on, so you're watching just garbage TV. Mm-hmm. And I was watching like a Charles in Charge, where the whole thing was whether Charles, played by Scott Baio, could be able to use his Springsteen tickets.
Yeah.
And the parents that he was always watching the kids for were trying to get the tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So that said something to me when I was young. Is like, I think Springsteen's really for old people.
Yeah.
Who are reliving their teen years and think it was having that 57 Chevy and leaving,
you know,
that town and never looking back.
Well, you know, here's something. Like, to me, Springsteen was the guy who appealed to my friends' dads, because my dad didn't listen. My parents did not listen to rock and roll. My dad listened to classical music. You know, my dad hated pop culture, hates it. You know,
right.
It's just like,
well, he's like Howard. Isn't he like Howard Roark? He's kind of like an architect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's an architect. You know, and he loves like classical art, classical music. You know, he's a very old school, old world, you know, guy.
Right.
You know. So, you know, my dad always dressed like a adult. You know.
Uh-huh.
You know, never wore T-shirts. Never skewed young. And
right.
I remember one of my friends stayed over and to sleep over when I was like 13. No, 14, I think. Mm-hmm. And we were listening to – I remember we stayed up listening to The Offspring. We were like, yeah, Offspring's awesome. Like, we like The Offspring and Metallica, man. You know, so –
oh, man.
Yeah.
I have yelled at you guys.
Yeah. And so we were like, oh, man, Smash, this album's great. So – but But so I remember his dad came to pick him up, and his dad was older than my dad,
mm-hmm.
by like a decade, I think.
Right.
Not a decade, maybe half a decade. And his dad showed up, and he was wearing a leather jacket, and he was dressed like, I don't know, he looked like Danny Zuko, but old. And I remember thinking, why is he dressed like that? Like, that's not how adults are supposed to dress. You know, I remember like judging his dad for the way he dressed. I was like, you're not supposed to dress like that. You're not James Dean. Come on.
You know, when I was a kid, no one over 30, I don't recall ever see wearing a T-shirt. Like, maybe until I was at a rock concert.
Yeah, this guy had like, he had like a black leather jacket, like, and his hair was like, you know.
Did he go, what, where?
Hey.
but yeah, it's true. It's like when I was young, when you were 40, you were old.
Yeah.
40 was middle aged.
Oh, yeah. That's what I've heard. Everybody says, oh, you're over the hill.
Yeah. And it's like nowadays, like, I think they consider something like 55 to be middle aged. I'm not even sure anymore.
Right.
And I mean, but I remember when back when I was young, it was like 40 was like, that was your death sentence right there.
Yeah, there's like, that was when your life was just going to get worse.
No. You were old and you were going to start having kidney problems and all this other stuff. It's like, you know, you look at the trends in health and everybody acts like, oh, country's fatter than ever. It's like, you know, really, 40-somethings all look terrific these days.
Yeah.
Compared to what I saw when I was a kid, like when I hit 40, it's like, I look 35. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've looked 35 for the last, you know, since I was 35.
Oh, was it this girl at work? We were having like our company Christmas party, and I mentioned that I was 31,
mm-hmm.
and she goes, "What?" She thought I was like in my early 20s.
Right.
I had a guy I worked with one time who thought I was 18. I was like, when, this is when I was clean shaven, and I was like, nope, I'm 30. You
know? Yeah,
so it was very odd.
We're not aging as bad as our
I know, everybody talks about how unhealthy we are, and, you know, I think it seems like people are living a lot longer now.
They are. They're living ridiculously long lives, and it's just – I just remember it being almost like a death sentence. You were expected to have a heart attack when you're like 60. And I don't even see that possible for me. It's like, I still, up to like a few months ago, I was still taking martial arts lessons and working out like a mad dog at the gym and running, doing like an 8-mile run just for the hell of it. So right. I don't really know what the hell people are talking about.
Yeah. And people are more active than ever, I think. I mean, not than ever, but like, I think people are more health conscious now because like in Dallas, I look around and I go, everybody's all the girls are wearing yoga pants. You know, all the guys are like, you know, wearing shirts that accentuate their guns. That was part of what motivated me to go to the gym. Was that I was like, I gotta start losing weight. I gotta get in shape because, you know, I'm in a town where everybody clearly
surrounded by fit people.
By fit people who are really into signaling that they're fit publicly.
Right.
And I don't want to be that person. I think that's kind of gay.
You're not gonna wear the Jack LaLanne jumpsuit,
right? I'm not gonna wear like, you know, like these girls have like a shirt that says "Jim is my new boyfriend," GYM, but right. something.
It's probably better than the pink clothing I always see.
Oh yeah, I know, or Beast Mode. I have Beast Mode shirts, but
anything beats Tap Out.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. But that was one thing that motivated me to go back to the gym. But speaking of getting old, you know, one thing that kind of made me feel old, but kind of made me feel like a time has passed. And, you know, this will launch a conversation. Stuart's going to be disappointed. He's not here for this. But Lemmy died.
Right.
And I was... You know, I knew Lemmy was going to die soon. It was just obvious.
I think I made references to it on previous shows.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, I heard him on Corolla a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And he was hitting on Allison Rosen. He sounded like Lemmy, right?
Right, right.
I heard him on Jamie Josta's podcast a couple months ago. He sounded like he was 90. Oh, jeez. Well, you know. Yeah.
I heard one of his last interviews, and
I'll
I was
think
like,
that, "Oh, I was like, how can he even perform?"
Right. Well, I read his autobiography that came out like 15 years ago.
Yeah,
and he talked about what he ate. It was like cold chicken, and he smoked cigarettes and drank.
Yeah, he's always smoking, and always drinking.
And I'm like, "You're gonna be dead soon." It's like, you're not long for this world. And you're going to look pretty bad going out, too. You're not going to die looking good.
I don't know if Lemmy's ever looked good. But
well, I mean, like, looking alive. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right, no, he looked
like
a...
sharp. Like, you watch him on the old Hard and Heavy tapes, which Stu wants to do a show devoted to eventually. He's hilarious in those segments. Because he's so sharp. He's like a quick wit and everything.
Well, and that's the thing, like, when Ozzy was sober...
Yeah,
when he went through periods of sobriety, like you watch Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, he's hysterical. He's
right.
So funny. He's like, and he's so, and it's just like, God, that guy has dulled himself so much with drugs and alcohol.
And you look at Ted Nugent, and he acts like a 35-year-old.
Ted Nugent is still hilarious. He's funny. He's sharp. Like it, you know. Say what you will about, like, people are going to disagree with his politics. You know, people who listen to this show know we love Ted Nugent. But that guy is hilarious. Like,
yes. He's super fucking funny.
Like, you watch his rock shows, and it's just so funny. Like, he just always has like a line ready to go. A lot of rock stars, I think, could be stand up comedians. You know?
Yeah. No, he's a really funny guy.
Like David Lee Roth.
Oh yeah.
So are you a family man, Dave? You know. Started a few families last year. Start a few more this year.
One of my favorite lines was that I always use when somebody talks about how they lost weight on a diet. And David Lee Roth would say, "Yeah, my friends took me to one of those all-you-can-eat salad bars, and I passed out. It took two Snickers bars and two Cokes to revive me."
And he's like, "Yeah, you know, I decided to start running, but the ice cubes kept falling out of my glass."
They're just these old Catskills jokes that he probably found in some old Jewish joke book or something.
Yeah, he went to see the stand up. It's a club.
But he always had just his put downs of Sammy Hagar and everything else, and it's perfect. It's they said, what's going to be the title of Van Halen's next album? And Roth was like, they couldn't figure out an acronym for "Oh, You Miss Him Too."
I mean, these are the kind of things a front man should say. Frontman should be like, and like Lemmy's really funny. Like, you know, when you watch like the Lemmy documentary, he always has great stories. He's really funny. There's some moments in the documentary that creep me out that I didn't like. Particularly, like, because the thing about Lemmy is that has always bothered me is that he, I think people think his lifestyle is a lot cooler than it is.
Yeah.
Like, I love Motorhead. They're one of, to me, the all time greatest rock bands. They're up there with the Ramones, you know?
Right.
And as far as consistent, solid rock and roll, I think Lemmy as a personality is a great rock personality. But I think a lot of people act like, you know, he's this great he's this great guy, and I really think he has a lot of very massive failings as a human being that
people think
are cool. Like, first off, like, people lionize it, the way he treats himself, you know, drinking and smoking. That's fun when you're in your 20s. It's time to grow up at some point. You can't do that your whole life. Especially, you know, and it's you know, I know he's more resilient than most, but he still died. 70's not a ripe old age these days.
No, it's not.
I mean, and his decline was so swift. Like, he had those health problems like a year and a half ago, dead now, you know. And his doctor said, you know, you have 6 months to a year. He was dead like 2 days later.
Right.
But also, you know, he was also a guy who had a few illegitimate children, some who don't know about him, you know, and the stuff with his son in the movie, the son that he has a relationship with, was, their relationship was not a healthy father-son relationship. And there's other kids out there that are, Lemmy's their dad, and they never had a dad. They don't have a, you know, and they're probably kind of fucked up because of it.
Yeah,
and they're gonna fuck up their kids because of it, you know. And it's just these irresponsible decisions people have. They have lasting consequences that go across generations, you know.
Yeah, it's
a cycle of trauma, and it's just terrible.
That explains the Obama endorsement.
Did he endorse Barack Obama?
Oh, both elections.
Disappointing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
He was like, endorsing a politician just seems.
Like, oh yeah. Actually, when he endorsed Obama the second time, I can allow for the first time. I won't allow for the second time. When he did that, I said, "Oh, he's gonna be dead in a few years. He's totally fucking."
Yeah, he's been drinking too much. That's
about as rock and roll as Lawrence Welk. That's just ridiculous. Like Barack Obama. Yeah. Okay. Whatever.
Barack Obama. He's a rock bloke.
He tried to go, George Bush went into Afghanistan, that's going to be Iraq and Afghanistan are going to be your new Vietnam. Oh, wow, that's a profound thought. Anybody ever came up with that.
Like when Lemmy died, I saw these articles that were like pearls of wisdom from Lemmy. I'm like, Lemmy was about as wise as my dick. You know, like, he's not a wise man. He's a really good rock and roller. He can write amazing rock music. He's a living embodiment of rock and roll lifestyle, but he is the rock and roll lifestyle. But then, you know, but when it comes to like life and shit, he's the last person you should fucking listen to.
Exactly. Well, it's the same thing how they tried to frame George Carlin as some sort of political commentator in YouTube clips. He was not a political comedian.
No, he wasn't.
Nobody was. That was the end of your career.
Was it? I was listening to
25 years ago.
What was it? I was listening to Dana Gould's podcast, and his podcast is probably the only one that skews far to the left that I listen to. But he had this guy on who wrote this book about the history of stand-up comedy, and they were talking about Carlin and how he got he got a lot better as a comedian when he stopped doing cocaine.
Yeah.
Said his comedy was just like really too like not good for a while because he was doing too much coke.
Very true.
And then they said, and like I love some of his later routines, like towards the end, like his one about boys' names.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Jay Moore always says, fuck Tucker, Tucker sucks.
right.
Like, that boy's names thing, I play that for people all the time. And sometimes I lose friends after I do that, because they're like, hey, my brother's name is Kyle or something. But it is, that boy's names routine is one of the fucking best pieces of comedy ever.
Yeah.
But I love that complaints and grievances special. It's so good. But, no, like, I don't think Carlin's a great political intellect. Like, I don't know. You know, a lot of the like, I don't even think Bill Hicks is a comic, you know?
Barely.
Like, he's a ranter. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, 10 years later, he would have been an internet ranter, like an angry blogger.
He would have been one of a guy making YouTube videos where...
Yeah, YouTube complaining, wearing his leather cowboy hat to look rock and roll. It's actually the most un-rock and roll thing you can do.
That's one thing. What's going to happen to Lemmy's World War II collection, speaking of hats?
Look on eBay for all this Nazi memorabilia. If they allow that to be sold on eBay.
Hey, I didn't admire the Nazis. They just had cool-looking stuff. I didn't admire the Nazis except Hermann Göring.
Yeah.
I think he did.
Rommel was a nice dresser.
No, I think he one time said I remember reading it somewhere in a magazine and showing it to my dad because I thought it was hilarious because Lemmy said, I don't admire the Nazis except for Hermann Göring or something.
They knew how to polish their shoes.
But so what's your favorite Motorhead record, do you think?
Gosh. You know, because I mostly listen to like their stuff off box sets. Mm-hmm. But like I have like the first big Motorhead box set. I really love I probably listen to No Remorse to Death.
Okay.
Which is a compilation. So right. I'm more of a compilation guy. But I mean Ace of Spades is probably had the most spins in
I've been listening to every Motorhead record, but I listen to one a day when he dies. Right. I listen to the first album, you know, I listen to the second album the next about Overkill the next day. You know, and when I listened to Ace of Spades, I forgot how perfect that album is.
It is.
You know,
they hit something perfectly with that.
Like, that was them at their peak. Like, I mean, when I listened to that record, and I was just like, God, The Chase is better than The Catch, and, you know, all these songs are so good. When
it's
I was listening to it, like, every album, every song on it is a classic. Like, We Are the Road Crew.
Yep.
That song is awesome. And then I listened to Iron Fist today, and it has some good songs, but it's not as good. You know, I was like, okay, you know, Ace of Spades was where they really peaked out. It was Overkill, great album. Mm-hmm. Bomber, great album, but Ace of Spades is their 10 out of 10 record.
Yeah,
and
I think it's perfect.
And I think it's easy to kind of forget that because, you know, like one of my friends posted on Facebook when Lemmy died, he said, at least he'll never have to play Ace of Spades again. You know? Love Me Like a Reptile, Live to Win.
Yeah, it's like just one good song. After
it even has a creepy song, Jailbait. You know, you have to have that creepy, like, fucking underage girl song.
Right. That was mandatory on those albums.
Oh, I know, back then.
Before the power ballad was the pedo ballad.
Yeah, you had Ted Nugent did a bunch of those, you know.
Oh, Jesus Christ, the Girl Scout Cookies song.
Girl Scout Cookies. He was doing that way after it was cool to do that, too.
Right, like, yeah. For more information, please consult our Ted Nugent
episode. Yeah, our Ted Nugent episode. In our archives. But yeah, I mean, Ace of Spades is a perfect 10 out of 10 record. I think as far as their later albums go, I've listened to Inferno a lot. I like that song, that album quite a bit.
I'll have to go back and listen to that. Like, just give it a fresh listen. It's funny because last time I talked to Ronan Rowe, which was probably like a year ago, he was really listening to Motorhead a lot.
Really?
And,
there's a lot of like F Religion songs on the Motorhead record.
Yeah, it was odd because knowing Ronan, like listening to this, but I said, well, I don't know. I've been listening to it much since he came all out for Obama in the second. He goes, he came out for Obama? He goes, oh, he's listening to the Illuminati too much.
Yeah.
The Illuminati got to him, man.
Hey, man, it's what Drudge would call the state-run media.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, but yeah, but Ronan was like singing some of the songs off the last Motorhead album. It was like he'd really been getting into the lyrics.
Did you hear the last one, Bad Magic?
I haven't heard Bad Magic yet.
Okay. You know, World Is Yours, listen to it once. Meh. You know, I'll listen to it again when I get to it. Aftershock, listen to it once. You know, thought it was fine. I could listen to the whole thing, but I didn't go back and listen to it again.
Mm-hmm.
Bad Magic, I listen to it a lot.
Hmm.
It's the first Motorhead album in a while I've been listening to quite a bit. Victory or Die is really good. Shoot Out All of Your Lights, The Devil. Their Sympathy for the Devil cover is really rad. You know,
I'll have to check it out. Maybe I'll have to reinstall Spotify on my computer.
Yeah, just check it out, because I think it's a ripping, like, fast heavy record. I like it. But the favorite, I'm gonna have to go Ace of Spades. But as far as like underrated, Inferno's like the kind of deep cut album that I listen to.
I would say Ace of Spades and 1916.
1916 is underrated. Did you kind of like get a little like the song 1916 is heavy.
Yeah.
It's
I love Going to Brazil.
Going to Brazil is great. Even though I'm a Catholic, I love No Voice in the Sky.
No Voice in the Sky.
It's, even though it's like an atheist song, it's still a really fun song. But the song 1916, though, I listen to that song and it gets me. Like, it makes me misty every time I hear it. That is such a fucking sad song.
Well, he always had a deep interest in the World Wars. Mm-hmm. And there aren't enough World War I metal songs.
No, apparently. There's not. Like, I made one of my buddies, because we went out the day Lemmy died, my friend from high school. The first time I ever heard Motorhead, I had heard Metallica cover them, so I knew who they were. And mm-hmm. he had the Live in Hamburg album, Everything Louder Than Everything Else, or Everyone Louder Than Everyone Else, or something. He had that in his CD book, and I was in the cafeteria in high school, and I pulled it out and listened to it, and I was like, God, this is awesome! You know, and so, like, I hadn't seen him in a bit, and he just, my microphone cord came unplugged, hold on. Okay.
In a bit, and... he sent me a text and he goes, hey, let me, like, you know, I bet you heard Lemmy just died. Why don't we go out and get a drink? And, I said, sure. And so when I was at home, like getting ready to go out, I went, I'll make him a little, Motorhead mix. And I put the song 1916 on there.
Mm-hmm.
And he texted me. He was like, yeah, that 1916 song's interesting. Like, he was like, what the fuck was that? Like, that song's sad.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It's but yeah, he had a good career. It's a great discography.
To me, Motorhead, they're one of the rock bands. Like, mm-hmm. Rolling Stones, you know, the Beatles, Motorhead.
Yeah, although, you know, I hate to say it, last time I saw them, I was bored. I saw them 5 years ago.
You know, it's so old. That's the thing.
It was my third time seeing them.
Oh, well, I've only saw them once. I saw them.
I actually think they are a band best seen once. Yeah. I mean, in retrospect. But I did enjoy the second concert a great deal. I thought it was terrific. I saw them in Boston in like 99, and Nashville Pussy and Lucifer opened for them. So it was like a stellar show all around. And this was Nashville Pussy when they had a big 6'5" of Corey Parks. Throwing, you know, she was spitting fire.
Oh my God.
it was when Nashville Pussy was a band you could not miss when they hit your town. And Glucifer was one of those great Swedish garage punk bands that was big around the time of the Helicopters, and Backyard Babies were getting a lot of buzz. And that was just a great show. And the second time I saw Motorhead was at the Ogden Theater, and it was probably like 2004 or something. And terrific, just a really good show. Oh man, last time I saw them at the Fillmore in Denver, and it was like 2010, 2009. Ah, man, I sat down and looked at my watch and checked my cell phone quite a bit. I don't know what happened. It's just like, something was missing. I just seen them too many times. And yeah,
that,
just
I don't know. I've definitely hit that wall with some bands. I see them too many times, and I'm kind of like, okay, you know.
It's nothing new. And it's also the biggest venue I saw them in. Like, the Fillmore's huge. And I wasn't close to the stage. I just wasn't getting that vibe. You know,
close to the stage, I'm in it, you know?
Right, right.
Like, I saw Motorhead, I was close to the stage. I saw them with Slayer and Slipknot. And, you know, I was right up there. And, like, last time I saw Slayer, I was kind of far back. And this was when Jeff and Dave were still in the band. Yeah. And, but this time it was Dave and Gary. Mm-hmm. Jeff was still alive, but he wasn't playing with them. And, you know, seeing Slayer up close, it was even better. And Jesus Christ, I had seen Slipknot before, but I was far behind. Seeing Slipknot up close, I thought I was going to explode. Like, that band's drum setup is physically, like, assaulting to the body. Like, you feel you're shaking the whole time.
Wow.
It's intense. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have PTSD when this is over. And being up close for Gwar is one of the best, too. Just getting covered in blood and
covered
alien
in
jizz.
Blood and slime and alien jizz. Jesus. Yeah, I never seen Gwar. I just didn't. Every time I heard their music, I just didn't care for it.
Here's the thing, though. Like,
it's amazing.
That's the thing. Like, it doesn't matter if you don't like the music. The live show is so much fun. Like, even if, like, I took one of my friends from graduate school. I had tickets to a Gwar show, and this was after Dave died, Dave Brockie, and it was their Eternal tour. And I just said, hey, we're going to go see Gwar. And he goes, okay. And I said, just go change into some shit you don't mind getting ruined. He didn't know who they were, what they were. Afterwards, he was like, that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. Like, he was like a fan after that. He was like, oh my gosh. Like, like, he just had his head rearranged. Like, he was like, he said to me in the middle of the show, what the fuck did you bring me to? It was so wild. I felt like a terrorist. I was like, yes. It's
funny because I've heard Kid Rock has the exact same effect.
Really?
Yes, I've heard Kid Rock. If you see him live, it's like the greatest show in the world.
Oh my God.
It's like, he'll be singing, like, he'll sing some country song or whatever, and then suddenly he'll go to Sweet Home Alabama, and the Confederate flag drops behind the stage, and then it'll go up, and then he'll come out in a white suit, sing a song on a piano like Elton John, and it's just like, his shows are insane.
He started out as a rapper.
Right, he was the gimmicky white rapper from the Midwest.
Yeah, yodeling in the valley, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah, he had like a white high top fade and stuff.
Yeah, and then he did the nu metal thing.
Right.
And then he became like rock, like kind of like sort of like kind of redneck rock.
Yeah.
Like with American Badass and stuff.
And then he kind of became a weird bro country act.
Yeah, like now he started doing like covers of Feeling Like Making Love and stuff, and
but reportedly his live shows are amazing, and I always mean to catch him, I just never do.
Yeah, now that you've said that, I'd like to go see, because I've been to like festival dates where I see bands, and
right.
I go, you know, I don't really care about any of these people, but I'll sit through it, and then I kind of go, oh shit, that was a fun show, you know?
Right, right. It's hard to say if the last time a live band really blew me away that I did not like when I heard them on the radio.
Oh, you know what? You know what was a band that did that was Godsmack.
Godsmack?
I saw Godsmack on a festival bill, and they knocked my balls off. Like, they were
really
better than the other bands. I was better there. Yeah, like, they, first off, they just, like, everything was, like, they played that song Voodoo, and that bass tone in a state is crazy. But their drummer would start doing a solo, and then another kit would rise up, and Sully Erna would jump on it and start playing it, and they would have dueling drums. Like, it just was a crazy show. Like, I did not expect this at all.
I wouldn't be surprised, actually.
Yeah, they're a great live band. Like, I would see them anytime they came through.
They were pushed as a live band when they started getting big on like radio, because I was living near Colorado Springs when they first broke through, and they had a show like lined up at the Colorado Springs Arena, like literally weeks later. So I think there was a bit of a it was one of the last payola acts, you know, kind of like Limp Bizkit, where they were
right.
pushing to rate. But I mean, I think it was deserved, probably because they were a really good live.
No, that first album of theirs is great. Like, I went back and bought some of their stuff after I saw them live, and I was like, yeah, they're really they sound like kind of like you know, Alice in Chains a little bit. Like they,
right?
I think there's even an Alice in Chains song called Godsmack. So. I think that's where, that's where they got it from.
Yeah, everything sounds like Man in the Box.
With, I'm the man
Well, it's like that. I like that song that's probably used by every UFC fighter, Cry Like a Bitch. I think every UFC fighter goes to the ring to that song.
Cry Like
sure.
a Bitch.
Or it sounds sort of like Godsmack.
Well, and I know Sully Erna, like his solo group, did the song for the first Expendables movie.
Right.
Like, definitely in that, but I heard him, he's great, though. He was on Jamie Josta's podcast, and he spent, like, 30 minutes talking about what an asshole Nikki Sixx is.
Okay, I have no problem with Godsmack at all.
Yeah, he was just like, that guy's such a cocksucker, he thinks he's so cool.
I am down with Godsmack. No,
like, I know you've listened to, like, Josta episodes when he has, like the Melvins interview, the episode with King Buzzo was great.
Right. King Buzzo's a terrific guest.
But his one episode with Sully from Godsmack, that was a pretty recent one. It was awesome. he just went after Nikki Sixx for like, at first he was kind of like Josta, you could tell, was kind of like trying to get him to go on the rant. He was kind of like, oh, so like Nikki Sixx, blah, blah, blah. I know you guys have had your problems. And Sully was like, yeah, you know, whatever. And he kind of went, you know what? That guy's such a piece of shit. Like, he just kind of went like into it. And Josta was like, well, thanks for being candid. Josta's sitting there thinking like the blogs are going to pick this one up.
I just hate Motley Crue so much. Just
did you
favorite.
Hear about their last gig? Tommy Lee's kit getting stuck in the.
He deserved.
Yeah, that was like.
There was a Henry Rollins rant, I think, where he was ripping on Motley Crue. Because I've heard that one. And then I mean it's old, probably out of print, but he said something like, "Yeah, they suck so bad. They paid me $30 to mow my lawn."
I like the first Motley record, and that's about it.
Yeah, I hear the first album's good. I remember some of the songs played on like Night Flight and maybe my local rock station, but I just never liked them. They were like Kiss for like 9-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean,
and
like,
considering the Kiss is for 10-year-olds, that's saying quite a bit.
Kiss is for kids.
It is. I mean, half my listening friends who love Kiss. I'm sorry, but I mean, they're.
I own Kiss records. I don't care. I'm like, yeah.
No, I like the early. I do like the early Kiss records. I think they're really. It's a really good Slade ripoff.
Yeah, totally. They're doing.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think the early Kiss records are actually pretty fun.
What was it? I got the Dictators Go Girl Crazy reissue.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a Rock Month episode. It's great. I love it.
Rock month in January.
Yeah, rock month. Like, yeah, exactly. Hey, we're just riffing, you know. We were going to talk about movies, but our guest isn't here, so fuck it. We're just talking about whatever we want. I got the reissue of Dictators Go Girl Crazy, and Andy Chernoff in the liner notes was talking about how you know the music they were listening to they like because American rock and roll wasn't really doing so great, and they said they listened to the Brit like a Sounds from England radio show in New York, like they would listen to like the glam stuff, and that's kind of like where a lot of New York people like Kiss and you know the Dictator like a lot of like the Ramones and New York Dolls were all listening to that stuff.
Yeah, it's true,
and the Dictators too.
Right. They definitely sound inspired by the likes of Gary Glitter and Slade and the Sweet. Like,
and that's what didn't Jim Goad talk about that recently? Like that was his
Jim. Yeah, Jim Goad said on Gavin McInnes' show, he said something like most punk. He didn't think most punkers sounded as good as Gary Glitter or the Sweet or Slade.
And
he said that's all they're trying to be.
And he made a really great point, was that we are not as close today as punk was to rockabilly back then, and we're still obsessed with punk. You know.
He's right.
He's like, we need to move on, people. Come on.
He is right. He's totally right. And it just kind of hit home when he said that. Because I said, yeah, the truth is, I do prefer the Sweet and Slade. And I hate to admit it, I like a lot of Gary Glitter because of Gary Glitter's personal life being...
Pedophile!
Yeah, he's a monster. But you know, those albums are pretty good. I'll tell you what, though. if you want to listen to the Glitter sound without the guilt of listening to Gary Glitter, find the Glitter Band compilations.
Get the Glitter without the child fucking.
Right, the Glitter Band, his backup band, put out their own singles, and they're terrific. They're better, actually better than a lot of the Gary Glitter stuff, like Angel Face, and some of those tunes are just amazing to listen to now. They sound fresh. They don't sound like 70s rock and roll. I mean, it's really tremendous stuff. And Arrow was another one. There was a lot of good bands. Mud, really, you listen to that stuff now, it still sounds new. You listen to, like, The Clash, and it sounds old.
Yeah. I still like The Clash. Like, I love that. I think Gavin's show really made me love that song, The Car Cheese.
Yeah, he totally got me into that, too.
Like, when he broke down the lyrics, I was like, oh, my God, this song is, like, it's exactly the kind of romantic outlaw song that I love from, like, Warren Zevon or something.
Yeah, it is a great tune.
Oh,
and
man.
The Clash had some good music. I'm just saying that the sound is very dated.
Well, and the albums of The Clash that I think have really dated, like, Yogurt or, like, Sandinista, Combat Rock, those albums sound like shit now.
Oh, they're awful.
And but, like, you know, I think I still like London Calling. I like the first record, you know.
First record's great.
Yeah.
Give Them Enough Rope is pretty good.
Give Them Enough Rope's, yeah, that's a good one, too.
Yeah, it's like, but like Cheap Trick was another American band that was really into the Glitter.
Oh, yeah.
The Cheap Trick was, to me, Cheap Trick was like the American Suite.
Yeah, they definitely. They called them
extremely similar.
The Japanese press was like, oh, they're the American Beatles. I was like, really? No. Sound like English glam rock.
They're the American Suite, man. they're the American Slade. They just had that sound.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, but that's all great stuff. I mean, it was just an amazing, and didn't sell a single record in America in the 70s.
Right.
T-Rex, Mark Bolan, had problems selling albums and concerts in America.
I love that Johnny Ramone talked about meeting Mark Bolan. Yeah, he just liked to talk about himself. Yeah, Mark Bolan really liked to talk about himself.
Well, he was the biggest act in England, but it didn't mean anything in America. Mm-mm. Although I go back and listen to those T-Rex albums, and they're just awe-inspiring.
Oh, they're awesome.
Like, what the hell is going on? What were people listening to in America? And then you go back and listen, it's like Donnie and Marie. Mm-hmm. You Light Up My Life. Yeah, it's just really weird. Bread.
Yeah, bread.
You know,
that's a good way to describe it. Bread, like Wonder Bread music.
Bread was huge. It was just, or they got into Wings like maybe 2 years after Band on the Run came out. You know, it's weird. It's weird what broke through. Like Elton John broke through because of the ballads, but none of the glam rock really broke through in America.
So weird.
It's strange, but you never can really know what the mass, you know, general audience taste is going to be.
No, and that's the thing about entertainment. Is they always see somebody successful and they go, well, he's got the formula. Let's go to him.
Right.
And then they do something that fails and they go like, what the fuck? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
there's no formula.
Think about what a big deal Trent Reznor was after Kurt Cobain killed himself.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody looked at him like he was going to save the music industry for the youth or whatever.
He was the new, like, you know, troubled, you know.
Yeah, and then he made like an album that was just padded noise, and like somebody asked, I think it was The Fragile or something.
Yeah,
Somebody asked David Lee Roth what his opinion of that album was, and then Roth just described the whole story of why what's the fried sushi that you tempura vegetable. He explained the whole origin of tempura vegetables, that you had to fry them in this coating so they would last on long sea ships. that was his whole opinion on The Fragile. He's like, well, you know, the Dutch sailors would actually fry the vegetables that would last on sea ships without spoiling. So there. I think about that album.
That's a good assessment.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's like all the padding and sampling and doing the White Zombie, you know, movie samples and stuff to just pad out time on the CD.
Well, and that album, like, you know, when you're younger, you go, oh man, he worked on it for so long, you know? And
yeah.
Then you kind of go, why?
Yeah.
I see bands putting out great music every year. Why do you need, you know, 10 years to make a record?
Right. I mean, well, everybody forgets Led Zeppelin put out album like an album a year.
Yeah. The Beatles. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
10 years.
Rolling Stones. Some of my favorites, like The Pretty Things. It was just an album a year. It was a brilliant album every year. And then they broke up, or, you know, the lineup changed a bit, but they continued on. But nobody jerked around on an album for like 10 years. Like Axl Rose with Chinese Democracy.
Oh my God, fuck that.
And look what you end up with, you know? It's just an album as bad as you expected it
to be.
Like,
that's the thing is, like, when an album takes a long time to make, that's not a good thing. Like, when you get older, you realize that, you know, it's just like, you know.
Because musical trends are so quick.
Said Sully on that interview that he did with the guy from Godsmack. He goes, you know, I just got tired of you just kind of go, you know, it's not working today. Come in tomorrow. Come in. We'll write a song tomorrow. It's not coming today. We're not going to force it. Fuck this song.
They need that work ethic.
Yeah,
they
he was just like, I decided that, like, I'm not going to, like, you know, sit and try, like, I have a song idea. I'm going to drag it out for days and days and days. If it's not going anywhere that day, fuck it, throw it in the trash, do another one.
It's funny because apparently David Lee Roth claims he would write the songs, the classic Van Halen songs, in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I believe it. Like, that's what Sully said. He goes, all the great songs written in 5 minutes. You know, all the songs, he said, like, all the songs that, like, are hits for them are ones that just they came up with in a day. And so he said, if we can't get it done in a day, fuck it. That's what he said.
Well, like, okay, who's the guy who produced the early, Ted Templeman, the early Van Halen records? He really thought at the time they needed to replace David Lee Roth with Sammy Hagar. Because he had worked with
Montrose. Because he worked with him on Montrose, yeah.
Right. And in 77, he didn't see what the thing was with Roth until he got into the studio and they needed songs. And he saw Roth just basically write songs in 5 minutes that were amazing. That he would just write, or he would readjust lyrics in like an hour and then have the whole singing pattern. And go, like, oh, okay, I'm glad we got this guy now.
Well, and you know, David Lee Roth's career, his solo career, you know, kind of peaked out at the beginning. But
Eat 'em and Smile.
Eat 'em and Smile is better than any of the Van Hagar records. I mean, that album's awesome. Blows them away.
Yeah.
Like, they were just doing a lineup reunion for that record.
Yeah, I was hoping they'd tour.
But they did a show and the fire marshal shut it down. It was too packed or something.
Whoa, we were too hot.
Too hot. Like, I mean, that album, I mean, I think it's better than the stuff he did with, like, John 5 or, you know. The album's, like... I heard Billy Sheehan talking about Skyscraper, and he was like, you know, that was an experiment that just didn't work, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I have that on vinyl.
He goes, if that had worked, he said David Lee Roth would be considered, like, a genius. Because it would have changed the game, but he said, but it just didn't, you know?
It's pretty weak. It's probably the weakest of his solo records. Although, A Little Ain't Enough, he tried, but that came out right when...
That was Bob Rock produced that, right?
Yeah, he tried, but it was like Nirvana was huge. There was just no room in the market for him.
And isn't that the one with the guitar player who, like, has, like, MS or something?
Yes.
And he still makes music by blinking or something?
Something like that,
Yeah, some documentary.
He was, like, canceling tour dates, and I think they were blaming it on the recession. By the way, Clinton was president back then. I just want to remind
you. Oh, but I thought it was the greatest. I thought he oversaw the greatest period of prosperity. Isn't that right? I got a tingle up my leg.
There was a recession that summer, and David Lee Roth canceled concerts. He wasn't the only one either. It was like a lot of acts were canceling shows.
I think that was the previous Bush administration's fault.
You're right, you know, of course.
He didn't know how scanning devices at grocery stores worked. He was out of touch with the common people, so we had to get rid of him. That's why we had a recession.
And
I got a tingle up my leg, Obama.
That album was like in the cutout bin by the end of the year. It pissed me off because I paid like $10 for the cassette. This is back when cassettes were still purchased, you know. But then he put out that one produced by Nile Rodgers that isn't bad, Your Filthy Little Mouth, but there was just no market for him anymore.
Yeah,
and then he put out the DLR band with John 5, which is pretty good. Yeah. But again, you could find it in cutout bins literally a week after it was released. Because nobody knew what it was.
It was
he wouldn't allow
John 5
it to be
and,
part.
Ray Luzier, who went on to drum for Korn.
Right, right. And it was marketed. He didn't allow his name to be put on it. It just said the DLR band.
Yeah, which was stupid. And, you know, yeah. But, yeah, I didn't understand why they did that. Because who knows what that, you pick it up and you go, what's this?
Right, right. It has like Betty Page on the cover. It looks like a cheap indie release or
it,
something.
It almost, it just kind of felt like they were, they had somebody who was like, had really awful ideas marketing the album or something.
Yeah, it was David Lee Roth himself. Wow, I thought I could read that myself.
Yeah. It's something.
He didn't even tour for the album, apparently. So
yeah, and John Five talked about it on Eddie Trunk's podcast, making that record, and he was kind of like,
did Eddie mention there's some really good songs on
the record? The fans just did.
They give it a chance. Yeah. We didn't even know it was released.
Yeah, exactly. John Five talked. Whenever I think of John Five, by the way, I think of Jamie Joss, again, Josta's podcast. He had him on, and he was talking to him about the Marilyn Manson days. Mm-hmm. And he was like, so, like, there were a lot of chicks. Like, did you, like, he was, like, asking him about his sexual practices when he toured with Manson. Mm-hmm. And, like, John Five goes, I didn't really have sex with the women because I was paranoid about diseases. So I just, you know, would have sex with their breasts. And so Jamie Josta goes, so you're like the Tony Hawk of titty fucking. And every time John Five comes on, comes up on the show, he calls him the Tony Hawk of titty fucking. Because he would only do that with his groupies. He wouldn't have sex with them. So every time I think of John Five, I think the Tony Hawk of titty. Anyway. But John Five was on Eddie Trunk's show, and he said it was like the way he described getting together with David Lee Roth and writing that record was very interesting. Like, it was just like, it almost just sounded like he just like showed up at his house and they just kind of made it. And apparently John Five and David Lee Roth have made another record together that hasn't been released.
Yeah. It's been shelved for like 5 years.
Yeah. They were like, oh, you know, it's, they keep threatening it's going to come out, but I haven't seen it
yet. Yeah, I wish I would just release it. I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, I know. Just throw it out there. Who cares?
You know? Well, did you ever see David Lee Roth's No Holds Barbecue?
Mm-mm.
You guys have told me
about it and said it's amazing.
Right. It's just like, but on there he had like an ELO cover. He's never released it. He did a cover of a Chemical Brothers tune and never released it.
That's ridiculous. Okay. Why not?
Yeah, I don't know. He's a strange guy, you know?
Yeah, I kind of wonder if he's gay. No, seriously, I kind of do. What do you think?
Well, I've wondered that myself. Not that I really care.
I don't give a shit. I kind of just wonder, though.
It's more about the stage image and the contrived act and everything.
Yeah,
because
he's always got the like big tittied models around. Like
from what I understand, that's not the type of woman he likes. Like, he dated Sonia Braga for a few years.
Really?
That's only gradually kind of leaked out. But apparently his type of women were like kind of these small, thin model waifs.
Okay. I've never known him to be dating or like with anybody. But yet, you know, if a band does like a video with models, like was it Phil Collins said like, oh, Jesus, he knows me. That was our David Lee Roth video.
Yeah.
Like, it had lots of bikini models.
Right. But apparently he's not really good at holding relationships, gay or straight. So he's basically, some people had mentioned that his Raw show seemed to portray him as almost like a pathetic, you know, single old man. Which,
right.
And may have been why they were pulled off the web, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yes, they did pull the David Lee Roth show off the web.
Oh,
he's pulled all the episodes. Can't get some people have uploaded a few to YouTube, but you cannot get them off his website anymore.
That's there have been some great like radio shows that have just been totally pulled from the web, and it's really disappointing. Like mm-hmm. that, like Devin Townsend did this Ziltoid radio thing where he was in his Ziltoid character doing this radio show, and it was the funniest fucking thing. I was listening to it, I was like dying laughing. And then he couldn't commit. He said he was just like, I can't commit to it every week because it's too precise comedically. He was like, mm-hmm. I just don't have time. And he stopped. And then they just pulled it from YouTube. I was like, oh God, just give me those episodes. I just want those because they're so funny. That's a guy though who puts out like 2-3 records a year. You know,
right.
Just in, like Mike Patton, kind of talented workaholic, you know?
Right, right.
Like, he put out three albums in 2014, just a live record last year, but he and another live record's coming soon. But, you know, he puts out, like, music like crazy, and it's pretty consistent. Like, it's pretty rare that he puts out something that's just kind of okay.
Right.
Like, he put out a country record, a prog rock record, and, like, a crazy metal rock opera, you know?
But in other words, he'd be a normal talent in the early 70s.
Exactly! Like, he's a guy who's
just... You're not supposed to do stuff like that today.
Like, he just did this live show, this live album at Royal Albert Hall. No radio support, nothing, like, total word of mouth. And he sold out Royal Albert Hall in, like, less than an hour, you know? And just did this massive show. Like, I mean, just like that guy has built his own audience. Like, he's one of these guys. Like, he's just a mega talent.
Well, you know, that kind of segues into our our final message of the show, which is our premium episode.
Oh yes, the premium episode.
You've got to get it. You got what? 3 more weeks? 4 more weeks?
At the end of January.
End of January, we are pulling it.
We're pulling it. So this is the show with Garrow, the Return of Garrow.
Return of Garrow. You need to get it because you will not be able to get it after January.
Yep. It's not going to be unavailable.
We appreciate the purchases. We appreciate the attention. We've gotten rave reviews about it. People really love it or so offended by it they don't want to say anything.
Yeah.
but I mean, like David Lee Roth said, you know, can't get this stuff no more. This is you need to grab that episode. We are not going to put it back up. It's gone for good.
But remember, a little ain't enough. So
right. But you have it is a limited edition. You have to get it. You just have a few more weeks. We're not going to carry it after that. Right. And we appreciate the Phantom Sway for actually helping us plug that show. We didn't even ask them to.
We need to bring them up on more episodes because you know we've been on break and they've been doing like old episodes on their site, but a site that's been carrying us is the Phantom Sway. Is it phantomsway.com?
Phantomsway.com.
Phantomsway.com. And they've been, you know, promoting our show, and it's really cool. Kyra Davis and all those people, really cool people.
Yeah, Jimmy, all those guys have been helping us out and getting us to more listeners and kind of growing the audience a bit, which we kind of need because – you know, can't get the big names on here. We're not going to be interviewing the president, like Mark Maron. So.
Oh, yeah.
He's a creep anyway. So. I'm talking about Maron, not the president.
Well, yeah. I think they're both creeps. But
yeah, we don't like politicians.
I was thinking about today, you know, I was listening to that old that Drudge interview with Alex Jones, and he was talking about, which is my complaint with everything, that all the news outlets are the fucking same thing. They're all the same corporate bullshit. And I was thinking about how all movie sites are the same thing. They're all the same. SJW. Is Star Wars gay enough?
Yeah.
Is this progressive enough? Is this movie transphobic? Is the Hateful Eight racist? Is it hateful towards women?
It's literally like a computer program just spits out these articles every hour.
It's just that same shit. Every web movie website has become the same. It's become the same bullshit. And I know this episode we're not really talking about movies, but you know if you've been listening to us, you know we kind of talk about music a lot, and there's been a lot of music stuff to talk about lately. But But even music websites, it's the same shit, you know.
Yeah, it's just tiresome. But this is our pledge for this year. We're not going to do the same old thing.
No,
it's going to be different. Every show is going to be different. Try to get a show out every week. That's the challenge.
Yes, that's the challenge. We're pretty good about that for the most part. I mean, we kind of go through our spells where it's kind of hard, but I think this year we should. We're gonna try to be, you know, get one out every week.
All right.
was that a okay?
Well, let's not promise too much.
Yeah. Making promises on the show is always a difficult proposition, but
Be sure to
I think we've been more consistent with shows, like not like in terms of the holiday, but you know, more so than we have been. Like, this show used to come out like once a month, if that, you know.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. Well, I think we filled out a good show at the last minute here.
Yeah, yeah, just riffing, you know, no topic, a show about nothing.
We'll just call it riffing.
Riffing. Right. Winnle, 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 winnle. Like Steve Vai. Right. Oh, let me pull up to the side here and take a look, yes. Whoa.
But anyway.
She's beautiful.
Do we have anything else to plug? We got Phantom Sway in there.
Phantom Sway. Go to MidnightMovieCowboys.com. Look us up on iTunes. Leave us a review. You know, preferably 5 stars or whatever. You know, if you like the show, go leave us a review. That helps. That helps get us out there more. Subscribe, all that good stuff. Send us an email at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Especially if you have show ideas, if you have some show you want to hear, please let us know.
We'll do what we can.
Yeah, we'll do what we can. You know, if it's like, oh, do Star Wars The Force Awakens, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, piss off, seriously.
There's too many, that market's oversaturated. You know.
Yeah, nobody needs it.
But anyway. All right, John.
All right. Mahalo.
Mahalo and adios.
All right. So long?
Let's see.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time. Yeah.